Several years ago, ARSC set forth, initially alone, to reform U.S. copyright law, to better enable preservation and access to historical sound recordings, and to establish a public domain for the earliest American sound recordings. Tim Brooks has led that charge from day one as chair of the Copyright and Fair Use Committee. And as if he didn't have enough to do, Tim will assume the post of ARSC's president before this day is over. He's here this morning to bring us up to date on the events of the past year. Tim?
Thank you. First thing is to deal with technology, then the law. Let's see. There's five files, all called ARSC Conference. So this is going to be something that, no, it's not that one. A bit of an adventure for all of us. No, it's not the coroner. I may need a little help here from finding my file. It could be. There's a couple more called ARSC Conference over here. You can find my file for me. It'll just load it.
Top right.
Top right. Hit, there we go.
Is that one yours?
Try that one, yeah. There we go. May I suggest that the National Recording Plan might include a unified naming for files. Otherwise, in a couple of years, we are going to be awash in everything that's called exactly the same thing. Well, thank you, David. This is going to be a brief rundown on our efforts to reform copyright law, and hopefully with a little time at the end for questions. First of all, and I want to do this every time I talk about this, the basic goals that we're after are preservation and access. It's very easy to get lost in specific near-term goals. We want to change the law in this way. We want to have public domain or something. What we want is preservation and access, reasonable access to our recorded heritage. And any way we get to that, whether it's a private foundation or whether it's legal or whether it's, no matter what it is, if it accomplishes those two things, in my mind at least, it's a success. Okay, brief rundown of where we've been. We went to Washington, ARSC did, in 2008 with the support of the board. We hired a dreaded lobbyist at great expense because we'd never been on the Hill and certainly nobody knew who we were. And he had three goals. One was to introduce our goals, see if there was any chance at all of getting anything done or whether we're tilting at windmills here. And third, if there was a chance to help us develop a strategic plan. We found that, first of all, those in Congress literally didn't know about the issue of historic recordings. They simply didn't know. Even the congressmen who are the leading experts on copyright said, really? which was a surprise to everybody. And this was because, basically, the lobbying groups that have been there, the industry groups, have never brought it up. And would rather it never be brought up. Certainly that was the position of the RIAA. Well, it's been brought up now. We also found that it's a nonpartisan issue. This has nothing to do with conservative. They're both terrible or they're both good, depending on what. But they're on the issue of copyright specifically, it's not a partisan issue, which is good. We then sought allies. We were endorsed by eight major organizations. It took a lot of work to get to them, but they, when they heard about it, they endorsed what we were trying to do. We formed a coalition called the Historical Recording Coalition with three other organizations now, MLA and SAM and the Popular Culture Association has joined recently to give us some sort of infrastructure. In early 2009, we actually obtained a piece of legislation written into a law requiring that the Copyright Office conduct a study, the first one ever, on the status of pre-1972 recordings and whether the law should be changed regarding those recordings, which are now, of course, under state law and largely locked up. The record industry is not happy with this because it's shown a light, obviously, on something they didn't want a light shown on. But the Copyright Office did their work very diligently, I must say, and very fairly. They solicited input from all parties involved, industry, us, other Library of Congress, all others. There were sessions in Washington. There were formal comments. We submitted comments. The RIA submitted comments, and everybody else, like 40 different parties. Many of the objections were legal objections, technical legal objections, some of which are quite reasonable objections, as a matter of fact. That chain of title, for example. What happens if you bring all these recordings under federal law? Do you spend the next 10 years litigating about who really owns them? And we, in our response comments, hired a copyright attorney who wrote a very cogent and detailed and barely understandable to me response to that, indicating how these, how this needle could be threaded. The Copyright Office took all of that into account and issued a report, which is a recommendation to Congress, as of the end of last year. And you're probably wondering,
what did they say?
Tick, 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 tick. You ready? here's I just want to keep my eye on the time here. Here's what they said. In a nutshell, we didn't get everything we want. You seldom do in life. However, they endorsed our basic premise, that is, that pre-1972 recordings should be brought under federal law, and the federal law should then be made uniform across the country to accomplish the goals that we're talking about. Specifically, they recommended that labels could retain ownership of pre-1972 recordings, those made between 23 and 72, until the existing 2067. However, only if they keep them in print, first of all, at a reasonable price. Secondly, they could retain those prior to 1923, but not for the full term. It would be limited to a transition period, which they recommend at 25 years. The termination procedures, which are extremely controversial right now, would not apply. This is the artists being able to reclaim their masters after 35 years. There's going to be a huge battle in Congress about that. The industry is trying to repeal that because they're going to lose some of the most valuable recordings from the 60s and 70s as they are reclaimed starting next year. That will apply, as it does now, to 1967 or 1977 forward, not to these early recordings. And the ownership chain of title business would be clarified by just saying whoever owned it at the time of enactment would own it going forward. Those two things don't mean a whole lot to us in terms of access and preservation. They mean a lot to the record industry, and fine, if it makes them happier with it, absolutely. They must register any recordings that they claim. That would, be, for the first time, mean that if you are seeking rights in something and you don't know who owns it, rather than live in fear that somebody is going to rise up and bite you, there will be a registry, and you can go to it, and you can find out if anybody's claimed it or not. That would be a huge advance. Orphans, those for whom no one steps forward and claims them, would become public domain. Those that go out of print and they don't keep them in available at market prices would become public domain. And I hardly need to tell you how valuable to us those two last points would be. So in effect, this is a use it or lose it bill. This tells the record industry, sure, if you're going to keep it available and people have access to it, that's a form of preservation, you can within certain limits. But if you don't, it's public domain. Not dissimilar to what Europe has just done recently. It's in effect an orphan works bill for recordings. You may remember that the orphan works bill, which was passed by the Senate but hasn't gotten through the House yet, has been stopped by the photographers who are very afraid that all their photography is going to be stolen. Well, this neatly avoids that problem by saying we're not interested in photographs. This is about recordings. And it's a reminder to Congress to get moving on Section 108 reform, which is the preservation exemptions for libraries and archives as well. So what are the next steps? ARSC has put a long-ignored issue on the table. Clearly, the light hasn't shone on this ever, really. Even in the original law, there were no hearings on all this. Well, it's out there now, and those people in 08 who said really are now very much aware of it. The RIAA and the industry has not taken a formal position on it. However, the RIAA is closely allied with an organization called the American Association of Independent Music, which represents a broad range of smaller labels. RIAA tends to be the big labels. And they have always walked in lockstep. During the hearings, the A2IM was actually more violently opposed to any change than the RIAA was, pounding the table and saying never, never, never. When the report came out, the A2IM, this close ally, said, well, this isn't so bad. We could actually live with this publicly to their members. There are some advantages for them in this, too. So it's a sign that the dreaded opposition to this may not be as ferocious as you might fear. There are many, many steps. I don't want to promise anything, but the initial indications are that they may be more concerned about other things than they are about Nora Bay's records, not to mention George W. Johnson. Just thought I'd get that in. Or Little Wonder, I should get that in, too. So the next step is getting Congress to act. It's a saying in Washington, nothing happens in even-numbered years. You only get past an odd-numbered year. It's an election year, even numbered year is an election year, and they get all tied up with each other and strangling each other. So we're not going to get anything done in 2012, nor is anybody else going to get anything done in 2012. But 2013 is certainly a possibility, and 2015 and so forth. We need to build up to that. We need to develop allies. We need time. Possible allies are unions, which don't want stuff locked up because their members get no royalties, possibly the electronics companies. And as I mentioned, success may take many forms. It could be flat-out legislation, which we dream of, but it could be some other kind of compromise that accomplishes those two goals. We have a very close ally with the MLA, as you probably know, and Eric Harbison, who is the chair of their legislation committee and very knowledgeable about these issues, worked very closely with him. Just so happens he lives in the district of a member of the Judiciary Committee who's very interested in copyright and even introduced a bill to federalize early recordings at one point. So we're going to meet with him, and the Copyright Committee met a couple of days ago talking about other congressmen, Judiciary Committee and the House. That's the place where everything starts. So getting through to congressmen on that, John Conyers is the ranking Democrat on that, the so-called congressman from Motown, very interested, he represents Detroit, very interested in music. Lamar Smith from Texas is the chair now, since it's in Republican hands. He introduced the Orphan Works Bill in 06. That's gotten partway, but hasn't gotten through Congress entirely yet. So there's some indication on both of the leaders of that committee that we may find some people who will listen to us there. So we're going to be working on that. Your support has been important to this. That's why we were able to hire a copyright attorney to help us. We may call on you to help us contacting congressmen at the point where something gets on the table that we want to support. You can also support us, of course, by going to the recordingcopyright.org website, it's very simple, and signing the petition therein. You don't even have to use your name if you want to remain anonymous. If you want to make a statement, you can. More people that sign up for that, the more indication there is of support for this, which is always helpful as well. So that's where we are, and I thank you very much. Your time for just about 4 minutes. Can I put this one? Could you put the slide on, please? There, what is up? Yes, John. That's a good question. That is kind of an ancillary field to what we are working on, which is traditional published and unpublished recordings. And frankly, I'm not an expert on broadcast recordings. So, I mean, if there's somebody else who wants to address that. The issue of preservation, you have to separate the two issues, versus access. I would recommend strongly to every institutional representative here, don't worry about the law, preserve. In terms of your preservation activities, and there are, you know, Section 108 is the one that contains the rules for that, nobody gets sued for preserving something. It's access that the industry is very concerned about. And as some people have said, you can't have the second without the first. If you don't preserve it, there's nothing to access. So although the preservation, the legal preservation standards in 108 are not where, they're not state of the art, they're not best practices, they are there, and I think we will get there legally. But even before we get there legally, and I don't know if anybody disagrees with me on this, I think it is extremely difficult for a commercial organization to even contemplate suing somebody for preserving something that is deteriorating. And I don't know of cases where they've done that. Access, and they've said actually in the hearings that we had, we're not going to sue anybody over that. Now that's, you know, something said, but I think you're on very firm ground preserving right now, today, the best way you can things. Access to it, putting it on the web, certainly any kind of release of it, that's separate. But preserving, go forth and preserve. Sure.
I'm curious how these procedures are going to impact records that were never authorized for use. I think specifically like the 1000 records were never authorized to be released, but they had leaked out a lot of them. And I'm wondering, people who don't make the material accessible, would this bring these unauthorized 1000 recordings into the public domain, or would it lead people who are trying to protect them to start destroying them that are going to be legally can't be made available?
No, remember that it's use it or lose it. So if they do not, A, claim ownership, then they're going to lose it. So they would have to claim ownership of these, first of all. I'm sorry? Yeah, the record company that made them in the first place. No, well, use it or lose it applies to something that has been released. If it's never been released, say an unissued take or something, I think is what you're talking about, or something like that. Well, no, we're not legitimizing unauthorized releases. There's a whole moral issue about whether it should be made available if the intent of the artist and or the original owner was not to make it available. No, this is not intended to pry free things that are deliberately intended not to be released. We wouldn't want to, you know, go into your home and take something out and say, you know, the world has to have it. No, it's not that kind.
One more, and then
Mike.
In your newsletter posting, you mentioned that, that it was said that streaming was not necessarily going to be a the way to release it, to keep it available to the public. Is that going to fly with the way the industry is going, that prove, okay, we are getting out the things from the first and second and third decades of this century.
Right. We made a point in the hearings to distinguish downloading, where you actually get something, or physical, from streaming. And the Copyright Office agreed with that and wrote it into their recommendations that they didn't think streaming should be a way to do this. The record companies will probably push back and say, yeah, that's fine, and we will push back against them. I disagree with you that streaming is going to be the way of the future. Streaming is restricted access, essentially. Streaming means you can peek in the window, but you can't really have it. And that's not, obviously, as scholars, we can't work with that. And they got that. And that is on the table now. I don't doubt that the record companies will try to make the access as restrictive as they can make it, and we will push back and say, no, that's not access.
Do you think we'll prevail?
I don't know. I'm afraid that's it for now.
Thank you, Tim. Okay, see George and Kim over here, and they'll take care of you on that.